Hillary Clinton isn't authentic, except for when she is, and then no one can handle it. Hillary Clinton has shared her story on what happened last November in the election that she lost to Donald Trump. She's shared what happened in a book that is called exactly that, What Happened. And in it, she points fingers. She points fingers at people who she says played a part in her losing the election. And some people are loving it, while others are telling her to be quiet. Some people are loving it, while others are pushing back.
I think this pushback is a bunch of shit. If anyone has earned the right to go out in any way like they like, it's Hillary. I did not see anyone telling Kerry that he should resign his seat in the Senate and keep quiet when he lost to Bush. It's a total bunch of crap.
This episode, we're looking at Hillary Clinton's supposed blame game. Can a woman politician call people out? Or is that a privilege that's reserved for men? That's the question that we're trying to explore on this episode of The Gender Knot, the podcast where we untangle the new masculinity and femininity. I'm your host, I'm Nastaran Tavakoli-Farr, but you can call me Naz, and we're trying to figure out gender roles for the modern era. This episode is going to be jam-packed, so let's get straight to it. We'll be speaking to Hadley Freeman of The Guardian, Peter, who works in politics in DC, Jonathan Freeman, who campaigned full-time for Obama in 2008, Russ Finkelstein, a journalist who covered the 2016 campaign, and political reporter Claire Foran of The Atlantic.
No election has ever been more sexist than this election, and not just because of Hillary, but because of Trump.
Like, I feel like a lot of the commentary has either been like, no, she shouldn't have written it, or there's been a backlash from people being like, you shouldn't criticize her, and if you criticize her, you are being sexist. But I feel like that kind of line of commentary in some ways like also sort of shuts down some of the kind of more, like a potentially more complex conversation about like what she's actually saying.
But first, let's untangle this question a bit. Can a woman politician call people out? Or is that a privilege reserved for men? This episode is about the reaction to Hillary Clinton's new book, What Happened, which came out about a fortnight ago. She's also been busy giving loads of interviews about the book and about what happened. She calls people out, be it former FBI Director James Comey, Bernie Sanders, Julian Assange, Vladimir Putin, and others. And there's been a lot of praise and also a lot of pushback. Now, I don't want to get into the details because that can take up an entire episode itself. Probably my personal favorite piece on all this is by David Remnick of The New Yorker. It's called Hillary Clinton Looks Back in Anger. And he talks to Hillary and also Democrats who don't want to hear what she has to say. And there's more. Now, we're gonna dig into this, into whether a woman politician can do this, can call people out in the first place. Or is that a privilege reserved for men? Or is the pushback because of something else entirely? This episode is also a follow-up to a previous episode where we explored emotions and leadership and asked if emotions help or hinder female leaders. We focused this episode on Hillary Clinton and the 2016 US presidential elections. We'll be following up with the guests of that episode, as well as speaking to a few others, to figure out just why there's been such a reaction to Hillary's book and to the fact that she's calling so many people out by name. I'm struck by this question of women calling people out because it's something that I do myself, and it's something that I take a lot of pride in. It's something that I do myself, and it garners me a lot of respect and admiration from women and from men, and in fact, often especially from men, until it doesn't because someone can't handle it. And so the very thing that they admire me for is what I then get attacked for. And I'm sure this is a dynamic that is familiar for a lot of you listening, especially for a lot of women listening. For all people, so many things in life are actually a double-edged sword. I and many other women are familiar with this notion, the strong woman who stands up and doesn't take shit and expresses herself clearly and makes herself seen and heard and owns who she is and what she's thinking and feeling. It's so admirable and attractive and inspiring and energizing and also utterly threatening. And it's threatening not just to men, but to everyone on some level or another. I'm struck by the reaction to Hillary's book, as it seems that this is what everyone has been wanting from her all along. Some outrage, some emotion, some so-called authenticity. And yet she's doing just that, and so many people simply do not want to hear it. It seems less about disagreement with her and what she's saying in her book, but rather it's like they can't really handle it, even though that's what they've wanted from her all along. What makes it hard is that Hillary's is such a unique case. It's hard to untangle what are reactions to Hillary Clinton because she's a woman, and what are reactions to Hillary Clinton because she's Hillary Clinton. On some level, a lot of this outrage towards her being outraged does look sexist. But also, I'm not so sure. Hillary isn't your average woman. I mean, most prominent politicians aren't average people either. But let's be honest, what she's done with this book isn't a standard reaction to losing an election either. As much as I think there is a current of sexism to this, I can't think of another candidate who's lost an election and come out and actually called people out by name in this way, who has gone on podcasts and talk shows and done interviews with prominent journalists and named people who they specifically think wrecked things for them. And to her credit, she points fingers at herself too. But the reaction I'm seeing, well, it's hard to tell if it's outrage at a woman speaking up and calling people out, or more outrage or maybe even surprise that anyone would do such a thing in the first place. I've been reading Hillary's book, and it's been exhilarating. I've never really been a fan of Hillary Clinton. That's not related to her, but more that I'm not really a fan of any politician, so have felt as indifferent to her as I do to many others. But the book has made me really like her. I like her expressing herself so candidly. I like hearing her expressing the difficulties of the fine line she has to walk as a woman, in passages that are so relatable to myself and to so many other women, but amplified in intensity by 100,000. I love when she says, quote, "When I feel wronged, I get mad, and then I think about how to fight back," end quote. Or the part where she says, quote, "I could finally let my smile drain away," end quote, and so many other lines. I'm also enjoying her complexity, and also her self-awareness, and the way that she talks about her disappointment at individuals, at herself, at her country, at the situation. She's jumping off the page to me like she's a fully three-dimensional person, which is exactly what everyone wanted from her all along. KD, our co-producer, has been poking fun at me. Whenever I say that the book is making me really like her, KD laughs and says that that is the whole point of these books in the first place. As an aside, KD doesn't dislike Hillary or her book, she just likes teasing me for the many screenshots I sent her of highlighted passages from the book. I'm interested in whether a woman politician can call people out, or if that's a privilege reserved for men, as isn't that the whole nature of politics in the first place? It's all about calling out injustices, or other people, or things that others have done that they shouldn't have done. Standing up and fighting back, isn't that the whole point of being a leader? So much political debate is exactly that. People arguing with each other for hours, whether on campaign trails or in the media or day to day when discussing and setting policy. Isn't it all about challenging each other, challenging ideas, challenging the status quo? On some level, maybe I say that as I'm in the UK, where there's a really adversarial tone to political discussion. A really adversarial tone, which is also a very male one as well, and something that warrants an episode in itself. But the notion of a politician causing outrage for calling people out is absolutely baffling to me, because isn't that largely what being a politician is about in the first place, and largely what being a leader is about? Now, we're going to try to untangle this question. We want to explore why Hillary Clinton's book and her calling people out has led to such a reaction. Is it sexism? Is it that women politicians can't call people out? Or is it more complicated than that? Is it to do with the way she's calling people out? Or something else entirely? Or do I just have it wrong, and that politicians don't and can't really call others out, and especially not in the way that Hillary has been doing so? Again, we're going to keep this culturally specific and hence only focus on the US and Hillary Clinton's context. We're going to be speaking to a range of people intimately involved in these matters, either as they work in politics or they report on politics. First, we'll hear from Hadley Freeman, who is a columnist at The Guardian. Next, we'll talk to Peter, who works in politics in Washington, D.C. Then we're going to go back to the two people we talked to in the episode on emotions and leadership. We'll talk to Jonathan Freeman, who's campaigned for the Democrats on the ground, and also to Russ Finkelstein, who is a journalist. Lastly, we're going to do some really in-depth untangling of this question with Claire Foran, who's a political reporter at The Atlantic. First up, Hadley Freeman of The Guardian. She's very loved here in the UK, and I'd wager everywhere else too. And she's American, but she's lived in the UK for a long time. She actually wrote a fantastic piece about the reaction to Hillary Clinton's book. It's called America's Vitriol Towards Clinton Reveals a Nation Mired in Misogyny. We've linked to it in the info for this week's show. Do check it out. We went to The Guardian's offices and had a quick chat with her. The tape is a bit noisy, but hey, that's the sound of a newsroom for you. Here it goes.
The top question that we're trying to answer is that can a woman in politics call people out, or is that just reserved for men?
No, she can't really, because when a man speaks out about unfair treatment he's had, he's speaking bravely, he's, you know, speaking strongly, he's pointing out unfairness. When a woman does it, she's whining, she's complaining, she's saying, poor me, she's weak, she doesn't have it in her. The hypocrisies are just so obvious that it kind of amazes me how few people can see them. The reaction to Hillary's book has been so furious, so angry, when all she's doing is saying exactly the same things that newspapers have been saying for the past 8 months, that the election was stolen, that there was Russian interference, that James Comey affected the election, that America is riddled with sexism and racism. I mean, she's saying all these things that we've all been saying, and then when she says them, those same journalists yell at her for not taking responsibility, for complaining, for wanting to have her say, for not letting it go. It's just extraordinary that the person who's most affected by the election is not allowed to speak about the election.
But you think of Al Gore, and he lost in a pretty devastating way as
sure.
well. But he sort of didn't point fingers the way that Hillary is. So is that sort of like the downside of, you know, pointing fingers, that people are going to push back?
Possibly, but also Al Gore, that election was a lot closer. He lost by 100,000 votes, a couple hundred thousand votes. Well, he got a couple hundred thousand votes, I should say. Whereas Hillary won 3 million more votes. Also, this election was far more corrupted than that election. She has every right to be speaking out. Also, she lost to someone who is so absurd. I mean, we all thought George W. Bush was absurd, but Trump takes it to a whole new level. I mean, and she lost to a reality TV star who loses money and goes bankrupt by running casinos. Someone who inherited millions and millions of dollars from his father and acts like he's a self-made man. It is entirely appropriate that she, the most qualified candidate in a generation, would be a little outraged at losing to this person.
Is there a female politician who you think calls people out quite effectively, or they call people out and it goes down well?
Well, at the moment, everyone's sort of pro-Elizabeth Warren in the United States, and she's the one that people point to and say, see, we're not sexist, we like Elizabeth Warren. Fact is, Elizabeth Warren didn't run for president. We don't know how she would have done, and we don't know how people would have reacted to her losing, because I really don't believe that a woman, or in fact a Democrat, could have won this election.
Can you think of a male politician who has called people out the way Hillary has in her book and has gotten a very different reaction?
Sure. I mean, just look at Corbyn, for example, in this country. Jeremy Corbyn calls the Tories out all the time. He calls out discrepancies, he calls out injustices, and people love him for this. They're saying that he's pointing out the corruption in the system. And he is, and that's fine. And he is also someone, I would say, who doesn't take responsibility for the flaws in his campaigns, for the flaws in his personal presentation. I'm not saying he has to be perfect. No politician is perfect, but he is someone who really doesn't take responsibility for any of that, and people don't mind. His supporters are like, yeah, that's great.
What about American politician, just because the sort of cultural context can be quite different?
Yeah, sure. So American politician who calls out injustices?
Who's male.
Who's male.
And doesn't get the sort of pushback that Hillary's
getting. Well, just look at Trump. I mean.
But Trump isn't exactly popular, even though he is president. Like, people
well,
do think it's crazy.
It was his calling out of the kind of bullshit in D.C. that his supporters loved. And he was right about a lot of it. You know, he was calling out the, you know, the swamp of DC, and, you know, how Hillary was in hock to big money and how she had so much money in her campaign and yada, yada, yada. Of course, the irony is that as soon as he got into power, he assembled the wealthiest cabinet of all time, and his cabinet uses private jets to get everywhere, whereas Obama's cabinet used trains to get everywhere. But people loved it at the time when he was calling this stuff out.
Do you think this is maybe to do with the fact that it's still maybe a bit new to have women in such a high level in politics? Like, do you think having more people like Hillary will soften it, or is it a deeper problem with women not being taken seriously or being told to sit down?
Yeah, I think it's people's reaction to women. You know, a woman can't sort of shout and cheer the way that men can. Men, from with men it looks passionate, with women it looks shrill and hysterical. People look at a woman and they expect her to behave in a different way. I remember during the election when we ran all these articles about why women or men, also why women and men weren't voting for Hillary, they'd say she doesn't look presidential. By what they mean is she doesn't look like a president, because all presidents have been white men, with one exception, Obama, obviously. So people just don't expect that kind of behavior, this strong, non-self-effacing, non-self-demeaning behavior from a woman. They, you know, the qualities they demand in a president are qualities they abhor in a woman. That's the problem.
People would talk about how she's not authentic, she doesn't connect with people, but it seems like she is being really authentic.
I know, and they hate it now. And they hate it when she's authentic, they hate it when she's cold. She's either too cold, too emotional, too inauthentic, too needy. I mean, where is this magical spot that she can stand, that she's not being criticized? I saw a piece on Slate the other day, why isn't Hillary angrier? Meanwhile, all these other pieces here are saying she's too angry. It's just, they make it impossible for a woman to have a high-profile political position.
Do you think, though, this is a reaction to Hillary? Because there's this sort of surprising thing of people just don't like Hillary, or do you think any woman would face something similar?
I think Hillary has it extra tough because she's been around for so long. And to point out that Hillary has endured sexism and is suffering the brunt of it right now is not to say she's perfect. I don't know why people find this so hard to understand. I mean, I would say that Sarah Palin suffered a lot of sexism, and I certainly was no Sarah Palin fan. You can make that distinction. Hillary suffers a different issue in that she comes with what they call baggage, what I call experience. Yes, the Clintons made mistakes. Her husband made plenty of mistakes in office. But on the other hand, you could never have a woman be like Donald Trump and just come in from out of nowhere. I mean, the equivalent would be Kim Kardashian running for office. And that's not like a joke comparison. I mean, Trump and Kim Kardashian have exactly the same backgrounds. They are incredibly wealthy reality TV stars. I mean, Kim Kardashian could be president, but that would never happen. No one would vote for her. She would be like demeaned as being, you know, a sexual object and stupid. Now, I'm not saying Kim Kardashian should be president, but Trump didn't have any of those criticisms. I mean, he didn't suffer from that. He did get those criticisms, but he didn't suffer from that. There's no way Kim Kardashian would be president, but Donald Trump walked right in.
But it's interesting, though, because Trump, I mean, even though he's in power, he's not having that easy of a time.
Like, yeah, because he's an idiot. I mean, it turns out being president's really hard. No one told him that. On the other hand, his approval ratings haven't, like, gone through the floor like they should have. I mean, I can't believe that anybody gives him positive ratings. More than a third of America thinks he's doing a good job.
A moment ago, you talked about baggage and experience. Hmm. Is baggage a gendered word for experience?
Well, yeah, pretty much. But I mean, you know, they could say men have baggage. But with Hillary, she needed to be around that long for people to accept that she could be president. And then she gets there like, oh, you've been around too long. It's just like, it's beyond a joke. It's so obvious. And also these things that people forget about Hillary. I mean, you know, she worked to come up with a healthcare plan when her husband was in power. She's been working to help underprivileged women and children her entire career. And people are like, oh, you know, what does she have to do with women? What has she ever done for women? It's like, maybe if you look even just on her Wikipedia page, you idiots, you would see that. I find it incredibly frustrating, really, when people say that no sexism played a part in this election. No election has ever been more sexist than this election, and not just because of Hillary, but because of Trump. I mean, he's a horrendous misogynist who is running with, as his VP, the most anti-abortion candidate that we've had in America for decades and decades. I mean, this is a man who thinks that women who have abortions should have funerals, and that the fetal tissue should be burned, therefore not allowing any testing on fetal tissue. It's a double thing there. Who tried to outlaw, basically, all of Planned Parenthood, who defunded all Planned Parenthood in his state, including one that only did HIV testing, and then there was an HIV outbreak. I mean, that's who we're dealing with here. Trump, this man who's been mostly accused of sexual harassment, and this psychotically anti-abortion VP. And people looked at those guys, and that wasn't enough to make them vote for Hillary. you know. So for people to say that sexism didn't play a part, yes it did. Look who won. I mean, these men were repeatedly misogynistic throughout the campaign. Trump said that, you know, a female reporter had blood coming out of her, whatever. No one would vote for Carly Fiorina if she was too ugly. And that all these women who accused him of sexual harassment, he would never harass them because they were too ugly. And that man won. And still people say sexism didn't have a part to play in this election. It's ridiculous.
Okay, so that's Hadley Freeman. After we left The Guardian's offices, co-producer Katie and I had a chat about this. Katie's American and has an interesting take on the sexism angle.
I think that the backlash to her decades ago started with a lot of underlying sexism. I think it still has a lot of sexism, but I think there's just a big chunk of people that just have a reflex of hatred towards her. And that no matter what she does, they're going to pick it apart, mostly from the right, but also increasingly, I think now, from the left. They're just tired of her. It's definitely partially sexism, but that's not the whole story anymore. People just hate her because they want to hate her.
If it was a different woman who was calling people out the way Hillary is, the reaction would be different.
Yeah, I do think that. And I think that because she's been in public service for so long, for decades, she hasn't really been able to shake the sexism that she had to face when society was less progressive decades ago. And so women who are coming in now are facing the current reality of sexism, which is lighter, fortunately. It's a lighter version of sexism. Sexism light. She has this legacy that's following her around of old sexism and new sexism.
That's interesting. The sexism Hillary Clinton is facing may even be a legacy of older sexism. So perhaps Hillary is even being judged by standards that are less common in society today. We're gonna untangle this all a bit more. We called two people in Washington, D.C. to try to delve further. First, you'll hear from Peter, who works in politics in D.C. Then we'll speak to one of the guests from the Emotions and Leadership episode. That's Jonathan Freeman, who campaigned full-time for Barack Obama in 2008, and he also volunteered for Hillary Clinton's 2016 campaign. Now, if you heard that episode on emotions and leadership, you'll have heard Jonathan's thoughts about how emotions in a male leader show authenticity, but can show a level of being supposedly out of control in a woman. I recommend you go back and listen to that episode, as it was, well, it was really good, basically. Before we get to our calls, I'm going to play you something quickly. I'd emailed Jonathan to set up our talk and asked for his thoughts about people telling Hillary to just be quiet and to move on. And he sent me this voice memo.
Hi, Nass. I think this pushback is a bunch of shit. If anyone has earned the right to go out in any way like they like, it's Hillary. I did not see anyone telling Kerry that he should resign his seat in the Senate and keep quiet when he lost to Bush. It's a total bunch of crap.
Okay, here's Peter, followed by Jonathan Freeman.
Do you want to talk first?
This is Peter.
Hey, Peter. So we're doing this podcast together, and we're doing an episode on Hillary Clinton's book, and we've called it Hillary Clinton's Blame Game, and we want to answer the question, can a woman politician call people out? Or is that a privilege reserved for men? So what happens is that we're going to just talk to a bunch of different people, get their thoughts, but there's no need for anyone to have a clear opinion one way or the other. So if you or any of the other guests have conflicting thoughts about the question or whatever, that's awesome and totally cool. And we'll just basically have a low-key chat about the question, really.
Yeah, I don't have conflicting thoughts.
Okay, cool. We're starting with everyone with that main question. So, can a woman politician call people out, or is that a privilege reserved for men? What do you think?
I would say that yes, women politicians can call people out, but that there is certainly a double standard, and it's much more difficult for that message to be heard in the context of how women are treated in our politics overall.
What are your thoughts about a lot of the reaction? Because there's been so much reaction, or at least I've been seeing so much reaction, which is along the lines of, you know, she should be quiet, she's bringing up stuff from the past, she's, you know, pointing fingers at people, blaming others, you know, she should be looking forward. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think she should be sort of pointing fingers to people who she thinks were partly responsible or who played a role in things going the way they did? Or is that sort of not the line she should be taking?
I think that as is so often the case with Hillary, the criticism and extremely angry feedback she seems to get says more about the people making the criticisms than it does about her. I don't think that any other politician would be told to sit down and shut up after they've, you know, finished nearly four decades of public life, and the idea that she isn't allowed to offer her perspective on what happened during this incredibly insane election season is baffling to me. And furthermore, I haven't read the book myself, but I've seen a lot of her interviews and read the excerpts, and the case that she lays out is very difficult for me to understand how anyone takes any issue with it, particularly the point about the FBI director inappropriately injecting himself into the campaign, not once, not twice, but three times, and the effect that that had on the race. To me, it's so obvious how that played and the thunderous impact that made, particularly with 13 days to go, that I find those who try to discount or outright dismiss the impact that that made, I feel that they must not be making that in good faith.
The backlash, do you think it's something specific about Hillary Clinton, or do you think that a lot of women in her position would have gotten that sort of backlash against her, speaking out and pointing fingers and, you know, calling people out by name?
It is much harder to be a woman in American politics. And the backlash she got was disproportionate from the type of backlash that other failed presidential candidates have received when they've stuck around in public life. Al Gore won a Nobel Peace Prize, made two movies. No one told him to sit down and shut up. Mitt Romney was considered for Secretary of State and is now weighing a run for the Senate in Utah. No one says, sit down, shut up. So I do think it's something that's unique to women in our public life. That's not to discount entirely that, you know, Hillary rubs more people the wrong way than even your average woman, Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris. I hope we won't see the movie replayed come 2020, and I hope that there's an evolving and growing acceptance in our culture for female leadership. But I do definitely think that Hillary was to a double standard.
So I'm not across things as well as you are, so correct me if I'm wrong, but I seem to remember, I don't think Al Gore came out and sort of pointed fingers at people the way Hillary has, or with Mitt Romney, or have I gotten that wrong? Is it a case that they kind of just got on with things?
That's a fair point, but to be clear, Al Gore didn't have a massive criminal Russian conspiracy attack our democracy on behalf of his opponent. He didn't have the FBI director inappropriately weigh in three times during his campaign for the presidency. Al Gore bore a lot of the responsibility for the myths of his campaign. He lost debates to George W. Bush. I didn't even know that was possible. He didn't accept the help of a wildly popular two-term president who he served with, himself and Bill Clinton. So those mistakes and missteps that were widely attributed to his loss were within his control, whereas that's not the case with Hillary Clinton's missteps. The FBI director broke with decades of precedent to inject himself into the campaign with 13 days to go and then again with 3 days to go. That's just, I mean, the facts are just completely different in those two cases.
Okay, awesome. Cool. That sounds great. Thank you so much.
All right, thanks, Nav.
Thanks so much, Peter, for your time.
All right, bye.
Hello, this is Jonathan.
Hey, it's Naz. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Shall we go for it?
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. So basically, this episode is called Hillary Clinton's Blame Game. And the question we are trying to answer is, can a woman politician call people out, or is that a privilege reserved for men? What are your thoughts?
She is clearly getting hammered. I have no complaints about what she's done. I have not read the book yet, but I've heard her on a few interviews. I think she's been fantastic. It does not seem like she is trying to shirk from responsibility. I don't think she owes anyone anything, and I think she has every right to be critical or not to be critical. And, she should do whatever she feels is the right thing to do.
From where I'm sitting, when I look in on the situation, there's a lot of, like, she should stop speaking, she should be quiet, she shouldn't be pointing fingers, and also people saying things like, you know, this election was hers to win, and she messed up, so why is she now pointing fingers? What are your thoughts on all that?
I think that's bullshit. So I think that the people who, again, are trying to shove her into whatever role that they're thinking, I think it's absurd. And quite frankly, you know, some people are, I think, are trying to make the comment that it's, you know, it's more of a political point that they're objecting to her bringing things up than not. You know, at the end of the day, there has been no real leader that has emerged yet within the Democratic Party or the left. It is not because Hillary Clinton has been going out there and sucking all the oxygen out of the room. It's been because there's been no leader that has shown up to play. And that includes the DNC chair, that includes Nancy Pelosi, that includes Chuck Schumer, who, for your international listeners, you know, is the Democratic National Committee chair, Tom Perez, House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, and the Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer. And none of them have really emerged as somebody who is really speaking on behalf of the Democratic Party or on the left. They are speaking on behalf of their various constituencies.
Okay, so correct me if I'm wrong, because I might be wrong with this question. But I think part of what people are saying is that it kind of also looks like being a bit of a sore loser, because other people, when they've lost presidential elections, they haven't come out and pointed fingers this way. Like, for example, you think of the way Al Gore lost, and, you know, that was pretty devastating too. But that, you know, they haven't come
Absolutely.
Out and, you know, pointed fingers and named people the way she has. And it's largely to do with that. What would you say to that?
Again, it's fair and it's not fair. I mean, it's fair in the sense that, yes, it is an unprecedented action that she is doing right now, but this was an unprecedented election, and you have a sore winner. You know, Donald Trump, you know, has never quite accepted the fact that he lost the popular vote, that he barely, you know, that he made it over the Electoral College, but, you know, is sitting here talking about how he had the greatest Electoral College victory, but didn't even have a better Electoral College victory than President Obama on either two of his victories. I know at least not for the first, I'm almost second. Yeah. I mean, I think he's, you know, been acting like a sore winner. I think a sore loser would be somebody who is only blaming everybody else and actively portraying herself as or themselves as an innocent bystander or victim in the whole thing. And I don't think she does that. She certainly blames certain things and certain people that were out of her control. But from everything I've heard, she is owning up to the fact that she didn't anticipate a number of different factors that, you know, they weren't able to correct her various mistakes. And there are certainly members of her campaign who I have heard from through the D.C. grapevine who have also owned that they did not quite have an organization that, you know, really appreciated some of the nuances.
Do you think it's sexism?
I don't know. I think it's certainly, there's certainly a level of anti-Hillaryism. I don't know to what extent that's purely due to sexism. The fact is that people have not liked Hillary for 25 years. Is it partially due to sexism? There's no question that there is an element of sexism due to that. If it has it carried through to this point, I don't know. I think it's less of an intellectual question and to a certain extent an emotional question, and not that there's anything wrong with emotional questions, but I, not being a woman and not having ever run for office, have a tough time putting myself in that situation and saying, oh yeah, this feels like sexism. I have no doubt that there are elements of the arguments being made against her that are being made for, you know, due to sexist reasons. But whether that's the entire issue, I couldn't say.
Good. Awesome. Cool. Thank you so much. Take care.
My pleasure. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye.
I don't think I've ever heard of a sore winner. But they are both right. As much as I raise other things, and the fact that Al Gore lost the election to George W. Bush in a pretty bad way, and that the Supreme Court got involved. But the most recent election is really complicated. Aside from having a lot more understanding of Hillary from reading her book, I guess being reminded of how unprecedented the entire election was, and how all these strange events took place, I don't know. It makes the sexism angle a bit more stark, to be honest. That you can have so much really unprecedented stuff happen and still be told to be quiet when saying anything about it. We're gonna go to the other guest from the Emotions and Leadership episode. That's journalist Russ Finkelstein. He produced elections coverage for Fusion for the 2016 US presidential campaign. In the previous episode where we spoke to him, he said that Hillary Clinton didn't express her emotions enough, and as a result wasn't connecting with people, and how that in part cost her the election. We wanted to know what he thinks about Hillary Clinton finally doing just that, finally expressing herself so fully, and whether a woman politician can call people out in the first place. We also gave him a call to find out more. Here it goes.
Hello?
Hey, Ross, it's Naz.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How's it going?
It's good.
This episode, we are trying to answer the question, can a woman in politics call people out, or is that reserved for men? But first of all, just off the bat, what do you think of Hillary's book and the fact that she's, you know, come out and started pointing fingers and started calling people out for things that they've done that she believes kind of cost her the campaign?
Well, I haven't read her book, but I have heard a lot of and watched and read a lot of interviews with her about her book, and I've read the excerpts that have been published. And I applaud her for sort of trying to do a postmortem on what went wrong. I think that's important for Democrats if they ever want to win an election again. I especially thought that her self-critique was incredibly insightful, especially given the conversation that we had last time, or that, you know, your show is striving to have. And I do think that it's valiant that she pointed out, for example, she thought, you know, Donald Trump was sort of creeping on her at the debate, and she wishes that she would have said something, and she bit her tongue, and she wonders, apparently, what would have happened if she hadn't. And I think it kind of makes the point that I was trying to make last time, which is that hopefully, you know, people can see that being more forthcoming about denouncing sexism probably would have been productive for her. But I also think that what's absent from her critiques from what I've seen so far is an actual hashing out of policy. She's pointing to a lot of practical things that worked against her, like Comey's releases about the DNC emails, Bernie Sanders, and things like that. But I wonder, and I haven't read the book, as I said, but I wonder if she gets into, for example, looking at what would have worked better strategically from a political standpoint. I haven't really seen her suggest anything of that nature other than sort of doubling down on the fact that going after the middle politically is when politics works best, as she's put it. From what I'm seeing, a lot of the sort of criticism of her around the book is political, but that happens when you're a political figure and you're actively engaging in the discourse from a party that lost the most dramatic election in memory. And then perhaps even politically, she wants to sort of shape and leave her mark on what the future of party is and political strategy and policy. And that's where I think that she is and should be open to criticism, because if the Democrats don't do anything and they just sort of employ the same strategies that her and Chuck Schumer and John Podesta cobbled together last time, I don't think that it will pan out well for the Democrats. Does sexism exist? Like, yes, obviously sexism exists, and that's not fair, and that's something that women face that men don't face. But I also think that racism existed when Barack Obama ran for president twice and won. So the cards were stacked against him. It wasn't right. It wasn't fair. And I think you see a lot of blowback now. Like, a lot of the current political climate is actually just people reacting against Obama. But he still managed to win two presidential elections. Can women call people out politically or publicly? Like, absolutely they can.
But
it's probably not as easy for them as it is for men, but it can be done.
But what's the fine line? Like, why do you think that when Liz Warren or Kamala Harris does it, it goes down better than when Hillary does it? Because a lot of people are really pissed at her. They're like, you know, she's blaming people, she's pointing fingers. Do you think Hillary gets it wrong? Does she call people out in a way that is ineffective?
Are you saying now? Like, now in her book?
yeah, the past week and a half has just been loads of people going on about how she should go away, she should be quiet. Like, even people within her own party, like, you know, we want to be looking forward. You know, there's a lot of anger towards her, you know, pointing fingers and being angry.
Well, I think a lot of it is, like, political, as I said, because simultaneous to her releasing her book, Bernie Sanders, in the same week, was rallying support for a single-payer health care plan, which is pretty much unheard of in this country. And if you would have told people a year ago, Bernie Sanders is going to propose single-payer, and 15 Democrats, including sort of like more mainstream members of the party, are going to stand behind him, that would have been unthinkable. Simultaneously, the press and the bandwidth of the public discourse was taken up by Hillary's book, where she sort of points to, you know, aside from a lot of important and personal things she wanted to get off her chest, she points to sort of the same old culprits that have been sort of hashed out publicly since the election, like Russia and Putin and Comey and, you know, all the stuff that takes up bandwidth and also doesn't necessarily address the substantive political fight that's happening in the Democratic Party.
But still, if you had to say why it goes down better when Liz Warren calls people out versus when Hillary Clinton does it, what would you say
to
her?
Well, I don't know if it goes down. I don't know if it actually goes down better than when Elizabeth Warren does it. Hillary Clinton is probably the most recognizable figure of the Democratic Party right now that's out there sort of engaging with the public. And I think that that subjects her to criticism just as much as it does to praise. More people are paying attention to what she's saying than what Elizabeth Warren is saying, so more people are going to denounce it.
It's more that she's a more prominent figure that she's naturally going to get more criticism.
Absolutely. And then on the left, there's a fight for the future of the party, and she very much represents, is the most prominent figure representing the old guard mainstream of the party. So people who are trying to disrupt that policy agenda are going to also take issue with what she's saying. I think she's being criticized legitimately and also illegitimately, but most of the criticism that I see and hear in like the mainstream discourse, I would say is fair game, you know.
And you'd say that because if you're going to be such a prominent figure, then, you know, you should expect that.
Absolutely. If you're one of the most prominent voices of a political party that is, let's be honest, in pretty much shambles at this point, yeah, you better believe that putting yourself out there and writing a book addressing all of these things that went wrong with the election, you better believe you're going to be subject to scrutiny. Whether you be a man or a woman, I mean, yes, like, people are sexist. She probably faces a certain amount of scrutiny that she wouldn't face as a man. But I would hope that anyone in her position, man or woman, black or white, would face scrutiny when you're one of the most celebrated political figures in the country. If the Democrats want to win an election again, what they need to do is really to figure out among themselves where they stand on these, on the core issues, right? Like, what is the true nature of being Democrat, and what does that mean in terms of policy? Forget about the candidates, you know? Forget about who the people are that you're going to put on ballot, and first decide what are the core values that Democrats really believe in and what represents their interests. And from there, then you can start to look and say, like, okay, well, if economic justice is really something that mobilizes people and that we can all get behind, who are the key figures within a movement that would be a good person to put on a ballot? You know, the idea that you have to sort of pick these figures and find people who are charismatic and who are going to compel the masses, and then after that sort of put together a platform and then have that person adapt and or adopt and sort of just take on those policies, I think that that might be a backwards way to approach figuring out who candidates should be.
But
I think it goes to the point of, like, gender and whether or not someone's likable and all this. It should really be secondary. You should find people from within. If you want to win elections, you have to find people who are from within movements that are at the core of the issues that you as a party care about.
I think what Russ says at the end is really key. It's funny when you look in on the US from the outside, because it really seems like so much of politics is based on the individual personality of the candidates. In some ways, I find that sort of cool, and in other ways, I think it's deeply problematic. But maybe that's the problem in itself. It's more about the people than about what the party stands for. Russ says that if parties are clearer on their agenda and choose the right candidate, it won't matter about the candidate's gender or other such factors. It's interesting because, as a woman, I actually find it really patronizing that some people may think I'd vote for a candidate because they're a woman. I find it patronizing to the candidate who is a woman, as though she can't win on her own merits, as though women need to use the fact that they're women to get somewhere, rather than what they're offering as a candidate. In fact, I actually had real issues with the hashtag to Hillary Clinton's campaign, you know, I'm with her. I had problems with that because it made the race seem more about Hillary's desire to be the first female president of the USA rather than her campaign seeming like it was about serving the country and society. And that is a real shame, as this is a person who has spent decades doing just that. But I don't know, I'm with her. I didn't like it at all. And also sort of having to bring so much attention to her gender and to potentially being the first woman president. Maybe it's a bit rich of me to say that given that this entire podcast is about gender, but who knows, that's my take. We're gonna do a little bit more untangling. Our final guest is Claire Foran, who reports on politics for The Atlantic. We made another call to DC and went really in depth with her to figure out if women politicians can call people out or whether there's a lot more going on here than just sexism.
Okay, so, Claire, what we are doing is we're trying to answer the question, can women politicians call people out, or is that a privilege reserved for men? So we'll just take it from there. What do you think in response to that?
Well, I mean, I think that they clearly can call people out in the basic sense that, you know, Hillary Clinton's book, which is obviously the larger context for a conversation, does indeed, you know, go after a lot of people by name and certainly casts blame in a lot of different directions at herself, but also at other people, including, you know, her former rival Bernie Sanders, people like former FBI Director James Comey. So, you know, I think she's shown with her book that she feels able to do that. And a lot of people have talked about how it's a more candid kind of expression than she's ever made in public life and more candid than a lot of politicians. So I wouldn't say it's necessarily typical to see women politicians doing that, but she obviously feels that at this point in her, you know, public life, and it doesn't look like she'll run for office again. So that's also a factor probably to keep in mind, but she obviously seems, you know, that she feels free to do that.
Because what's interesting is me looking in from the UK at this, there is a lot of criticism about why is she blaming people, she's pointing fingers, this thing kind of we keep hearing again that she should just be quiet and go away, or, you know, should be forward looking and stuff. Can you think of people reacting to a man who's called people out by name that way, aside from Donald Trump? Because I think he's like a bit of an anomaly in this sort of discussion.
Yeah, no, you're right in the sense that there's been a lot of, I think a lot of the commentary in response to the book has focused on this idea that she's very angry. And I was trying to think of, you know, examples of male politicians being specifically called angry. I think one good, and I can't think of a lot, although, yes, as you said, Trump gets called angry. But, you know, it does seem like to compare Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, he channels just as a political figure, he really sort of channels this kind of moral outrage. Even if you look at the way he makes his speeches, they a lot of times sound like shouting. But that's actually a characteristic that people really seem to love about him. And in his case, I think it gets described as this authenticity, this sort of proof that he really means what he's saying. And of course, Hillary Clinton, you know, on the campaign trail had to deal with criticisms that, you know, if she raised her voice a certain degree, she was shrill. I think you do see some of that in the reaction to this book.
So just on that point, I have her book in front of me on my phone. There's this bit which is really interesting. So she says, quote, "Meanwhile, when a woman lands a political punch, and not even a particularly hard one, it's not read as the normal sparring that men do all the time in politics. It makes her a nasty woman," end quote. I'm wondering, can you think of a male who people react to the way they react to Hillary when she's doing this calling out and, you know, calling people out by name even? Is there anyone who comes close to the reaction that she's getting?
Well, I think, so it's hard to unpack. I mean, I think, especially because you used that kind of imagery of like landing a punch, and I was thinking about with Trump, like one of the defenses that Melania, First Lady Melania has given of her husband's sort of aggressive kind of nature in politics is she has some quote, and I'm paraphrasing, but it's something to the effect of, you know, if you hit him, he hits back twice as hard or something like that, which also is sort of this very visceral kind of violent, aggressive metaphor, similar to this idea of Clinton talking about landing a punch. But in Trump's case, that's celebrated, at least by his supporters. I mean, on the other hand, I wouldn't want to suggest that it's only celebrated with Trump because, you know, a lot of the American public, even just judging by, let's not forget, he lost the popular vote. There were more people who actually cast ballots for Clinton. A lot of people don't like that Trump is like that. But I do still think that it's telling that his supporters and people who are his allies think that casting his sort of machismo as a positive, I don't think you'd hear that with, like, supporters of Clinton.
But it's interesting because that strikes me as kind of odd, because also what you want from a leader is someone who will stand up for you, right? So you kind of want someone who will call other countries out or other politicians who might be doing something that is not in the public interest or whatever. So does that inherently mean that as a woman in politics, you know, that's kind of stacked against you, like you're never really allowed to fully shine, because that important role of being a leader, being someone who can stand up and call people out, is something that you just can't really do? Or are we making it too gendered and it's actually not that gendered? It's just that, you know, Hillary's probably the biggest female candidate ever. So, you know, it's more to do with that.
I mean, I don't think it's the case that women politicians, you know, can't call people out. But I think that Clinton, I'm trying to think, in some ways it's interesting because, you know, she really ran on this argument that she was the more experienced politician, which of course she did have a lot more experience in the political realm. But part of that experience was serving as a former Secretary of State and kind of this idea that she could stand up to other countries on the world stage. And there was sort of this kind of foreign policy angle to it, which I think I'm thinking back to one speech that she made during the campaign that was being very critical of Donald Trump, but in this context of sort of, you know, making kind of this case of we need a stable leader who can stand up to other countries, and he's going to be somebody that we can't trust with the nuclear codes. But I feel like even when she made those arguments, she made them in a way that was very calm, very, you know, she had to kind of strike this careful balance between seeming strong but not seeming overly aggressive. And this is something that she herself has talked about. Like, she has had to think about how do you strike that balance of showing that you're ready to lead but not coming across as overly threatening, or just kind of like she's talked about before, and I believe she talks about it in the book, how she had to get coached. She saw like a voice coach, and the person was saying something like, you have to be really careful not to raise your voice, even if you're giving a speech, because people will interpret it as yelling. And I think she, sort of reflecting on that, kind of expressed some frustration and just sort of like, again, kind of the point of like, would anybody say that to somebody like Senator Bernie Sanders, who not only yells, but that's actually part of his appeal. So I think, again, I certainly wouldn't say a woman politician can't call people out, can't sort of be tough and aggressive. But I just think there's probably this whole set of considerations that they have to think about that male politicians may not have to.
Can you think of a woman who calls people out by name and it goes down really well with the public?
Like a woman politician?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if this counts as sort of by name, but actually Senator Kamala Harris of California might be an interesting case study because she's a junior senator from California, but she's considered a rising star in the Democratic Party. And she's, when I kind of look at the way she's kind of building her political brand, I think actually a lot of it is based off of some of the kind of confrontations she's had with either Trump administration figures or just kind of generally kind of calling out the Trump administration in public ways. So she really, there were sort of a lot of viral moments that happened, I think, when she was kind of grilling, I think it was when Jeff Sessions, now the attorney general, was in the Senate for confirmation, and there were sort of like heated back and forths between the two of them. And that actually was something that I think her supporters really, really loved, not being afraid to confront kind of a political opponent. And actually, clips of those moments totally went viral. I think for people that supported her, they loved that. They absolutely, you know, thought that it was amazing. And maybe in part because you don't see it that often, or you don't see women politicians sort of expressing and kind of channeling sort of righteous outrage that frequently. But at the same time, and I think this is very important to note, she also was the subject of backlash from political opponents that had a sexist tinge to it, in the sense that, you know, I think people called her shrill. I think she was called hysterical. There was sort of a whole back and forth where she was getting cut off as she was questioning people in committee, where she would get interrupted, which people talked about that having kind of a underlying sort of gendered nature to it. So I think the short answer to your question is it's complicated. I don't think a woman politician can call people out without facing a backlash for it. But I also think that it is possible for women politicians other than Clinton to call people out and to energize their supporters.
What's interesting is that Clinton, I was trying to find it quickly in the book, but there's this part where she talks about how when she was Secretary of State, or when she was like working under someone else, her being very opinionated was seen as a good thing, but it was different when she was running to be president. Do you think that's got something to do with it as well? Looking at all these situations, because the examples you're giving, it's still not someone who is running to be, you know, the kind of the number one sort of leader, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, I think that could have something to do with it. Hillary Clinton has, throughout her political career, she's always been the most popular with the public when she's not running for office. So when she was Secretary of State, when she was First Lady, public approval was great. And as soon as she started running for any kind of office, that's when it just like totally tanked. And so that's a more general measure. It doesn't quite get to what you're saying about expressing opinions, but I do think that they could be connected, in the sense that there's maybe different standards that people apply. You know, maybe people are more willing to give someone the benefit of the doubt when they're not in a position that's kind of really challenging the political status quo when you're running for office. And in her case, she was running to, you know, shatter this glass ceiling of trying to become the first woman president. She was really in a position to potentially upend sort of the social order, at least the way it's been in the United States. So, yeah, maybe people were less inclined to give her the benefit of the doubt, less inclined to view her favorably when she was a candidate.
So personally for you, who is the politician who calls people out in the way that you think is the most effective?
I think that when I was mentioning Senator Kamala Harris, I think that she's really been able to grow her following and raise her national profile in part through these confrontations. Really, there's been, and I think I can give a couple of other examples, but just to talk about her for a second, you know, she was considered kind of a potential rising star when she was elected, but really, the sort of the confrontations in these sort of Senate confirmation hearings that have kind of gone viral, those have really been the moments that she's now, in some ways, I think, most well known for, and that people who support her would probably point to. So I think she's been able to use actually this idea of kind of calling people out. Again, as you said, it not as a candidate per se, but in office, I think she's been able to use it effectively to raise and elevate her political profile. I also think Senator Elizabeth Warren is an interesting case study to look at as well, because when you think about what she's really well known for and beloved, it is also in some ways these moments of her kind of confronting people in the Senate, whether it's, you know, bankers or, you know, kind of calling out big corporate entities. And often this might be something that she does either in speeches or, you know, sometimes, again, in the context of Congress, making a speech on the Senate floor or in a committee hearing. People really love the sort of passion that she brings to the criticism that she doles out. But it's not always her going after a single individual. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. Sometimes it's her generally kind of railing against corporations. But she does channel a lot of anger, and people like it. So I think that actually both Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren do have managed to sort of effectively channel anger. But I think a key question is, both of them are talked as potential 2020 contenders. And I think if they do run, some of the barriers that Hillary Clinton hit, you know, would probably be waiting for them as well.
So what's interesting is that Liz Warren comes up a lot in these discussions. In the episode that we did on emotions and leadership, I was talking to Jonathan Freeman, who's campaigned on the ground. And so about Liz Warren, for example, he was saying that she's kind of a single issue politician, and that people think of her as, you know, being the person who calls out corporations and Wall Street and stuff. So that kind of, that was his point, that that kind of means that she can have, like, you know, the area where she's allowed to call people out. But just going on what you've said, male or female, can you think of someone who kind of has a bit more of a broad mandate who you think calls people out really well? But again, they're not like Liz Warren, where people kind of think of her as, you know, being about, you know, a specific set of issues.
You know, I've been mentioning Bernie Sanders, but I do think, and I am trying to think about, I'm trying to think if there's other, I mean, actually, you know, I think going back to even the election, and I think in part this was why Bernie Sanders and Trump were not only both sort of unexpectedly more successful than a lot of people might have thought, given their sort of prior political experience, but also maybe why Clinton sort of didn't see either of them. You know, I think she was sort of maybe taken off guard by both of them, but both of them were like channeling the anger of the American electorate really well. So not unlike Elizabeth Warren, that ended up being that both of them talked a lot about kind of power concentrated with wealthy elites and sort of criticizing that and attacking that. Although, I mean, Trump calls everybody out. Like, he really calls everybody out, not literally everybody, but there's like no sacred cows for him. So it's like he's not afraid to go after, you know, Republican leaders in Congress that prior Republican presidents would never go after, because those are supposed to be your allies, and really go after them, like, by name, like on Twitter. And I do think that, you know, his supporters really do love that. So he may be the clearest example of just a politician who's willing to call people out in a very, very explicit way. But, you know, he is not all that popular with the American people overall. I mean, he's retained a core base of support, but his popularity has consistently, you know, struggled to kind of top 50%. So whether or not that actually works for him, I mean, it worked for him in the sense that he got elected and has managed to, you know, retain his core supporters. But, you know, he himself has not managed to kind of win widespread approval by doing that.
So just on that point, what about a president who has been relatively popular, who you think has managed to call people out by name well? Is there anyone that comes to mind? Or can you even do that as a president? I'm wondering, when you get to that stage, do you need to be more diplomatic? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I certainly, nobody like in any way approaches the way Trump calls people out. Like, I think the general idea of being a strong and commanding leader is something that all presidents, you know, have probably tried to emulate, and they get, of course, criticized when people think they're not being sufficiently kind of strong on the world stage. Like, President Obama got criticized by Republicans for, in like, the realm of foreign policy, a lot of conservatives thought that he, like, wasn't doing enough. People thought that, like, essentially because he wasn't necessarily as aggressive or kind of bellicose with his rhetoric, that that was a sign of weakness. So I think you get the opposite, too. There's always that pressure. You know, I can't think of an example of anybody being as explicit as Trump and being popular. The one thing I was kind of thinking of was just, I think that Clinton's book has on its own kind of sparked so much outrage that I feel like a lot of the nuance of the book gets lost in those critiques. Like,
would you literally say that's partly because she's a woman? Like, it's more about sexism than anything.
Well, I think that that plays into it, but it's not just that I'm saying that it's sexist. In some ways, I also think that the legions of supporters that Clinton has will sometimes, and I think it's certainly partially true, but I think sometimes it goes both ways, where, like, she'll both be attacked, and sometimes that is a kind of knee-jerk sexist reaction, but I think she'll also be defended on the basis of, like, her gender, sometimes in ways that, like, obscure the complexity of who she is and who she is as a candidate, and in a way that I don't know that's helpful for our overall political conversation. And to be more specific and to give you a better example of what I mean by that is that, like her book it's like a lengthy book. It's very candid. It has a lot in it. And I think you can have, like, an honest conversation about it without kind of trying to shut it down either way. Like, I feel like a lot of the commentary has either been like, no, she shouldn't have written it, or there's been a backlash from people being like, you shouldn't criticize her, and if you criticize her, you are being sexist. But I feel like that kind of line of commentary in some ways, like, also sort of shuts down some of the kind of more, like, a potentially more complex conversation about, like, what she's actually saying. And I don't think it's fair to say that, like, any criticism or any critique of her book is inherently sexist, just because she is this historic, you know, woman candidate.
But I feel like a lot of the critique is about the fact that she sounds like a sore loser, no? Or that, you know, she shouldn't.
Yeah, I think that that's true, but, like,
and that it was kind of hers to win, or a lot of people thought that, like, you know, she so has this in the bag, and then, you know, she loses, and now she's pointing fingers. I feel like that's what a lot of the criticism is about.
I agree that a lot of the criticism is about that. But so, for example, like, even to just unpack that a little bit, like, this question of, like, who is she blaming? Like, she blames other people in the book, but she also blames herself. Like, she absolutely does. But I do think it's a fair question to say, like, when she... So, for example, she acknowledges in the book, like, she says, you know, I made mistakes as a candidate and I had shortcomings and I do, you know, take responsibility. But she can blame herself. But there's also a fair question to be asked of, like, does she really reckon with what those mistakes were? And so, for example, she has this passage in the book where she talks about her Wall Street speeches. And she basically says, in kind of reflecting on them, like, you know, I wish that I hadn't done those, because I just... like, I know that there was nothing wrong with them, but I guess I just thought everybody else would realize that, but they didn't. So now I kind of regret it. And I think it's, you know, obviously there's a lot to think about there, but I think you could look at that and fairly say, like, you know, maybe she's acknowledging those speeches were, like, a political liability, but is she really reckoning with the idea that, like, the outrage around those speeches... It also has to do with the fact that, like, people don't feel like they have, like, a fair shot. They don't feel like they do feel like powerful corporate interests are, you know, kind of taken away the possibility of achieving the American dream. And there's a lot of data that bears that out, that, like, inequality has gotten to really an extreme place. And in some ways, it's important for Democrats to be able to critique her, for the party to think about, like, where it's going and what it needs to do to fix maybe some of where it went wrong in the election. And I think that to say that kind of backlash to her book is just solely sexist shuts down a potentially really important political conversation that, like, we should be having as a country.
Claire's point at the end is really, really pertinent, and I feel it's in a similar vein to some of what Russ was saying before her. It's not that there isn't sexism at play here, but maybe too much focus on that takes away from fundamental issues like policy and whether Hillary and her party really understood the problems facing Americans and knew how to address them or not. You know, it's a tricky one, as I think those are really important points and also in some sense hint to where we ideally want things to be at. We ideally want to be at a place where we can discuss the actual policies and strategies of candidates, rather than discussing whether there was some sort of discrimination. And focusing on discrimination may give a pass to not discuss the important fundamentals which may be shaky. But I don't know, if a message isn't even being heard or listened to properly because of someone's gender, then that's a huge issue in itself, and one that can't be brushed aside either. I'm going to bring up two statements here, as I'm going to come back to these in the next few minutes. There are two sentences and thoughts that come up often on this podcast. The first is this: we judge in others that which we judge in ourselves, this being a well-known trope in psychology. The second: it's not an either-or, it's a both-and. That's a sentence I often hear from Michelle Lim. She's a relationships coach who is also a regular guest on this podcast. It's not an either or, but a both and. I'm thinking of this as after these talks, and especially after what Russ and Claire both talked about at the end, I think that these things are messy. Sure, the reaction to Hillary Clinton's book is not just due to sexism, and that shouldn't cloud taking a look at everything else that Hillary and her party did or didn't do. But I don't think it's easy to discount sexism either. Hadley Freeman said at the start that last year's election was all about sexism, and I think there's a lot to that. See, we're not talking about two candidates who were close in their track records and abilities, and that one simply lost, as that's what will inevitably happen in any race. We're talking about candidates with decades of experience in politics and who has worked tirelessly to help disenfranchised people, losing to someone with no political experience and someone who has done his fair share to exploit for his own gain. And then add in all the interference from other forces, which our guests have already raised. And, sorry, also add in the fact that the more experienced candidate actually won the popular vote. But like Russ and Claire say, there is sexism, but this can't be an excuse to not look at what the party needs to do to go on from here. Again, I'm going to go back to that line. It's not an either or, it's a both and. And on to the other line I mentioned. We judge in others that which we judge in ourselves. This comes up on this podcast a lot. Peter hinted at it too, that the criticisms about Hillary Clinton often say more about the people making them than saying much about her. Okay, I want you to bear with me on this one, but I'm wondering what underlying dynamics are going on in all this reaction to Hillary Clinton's book and to her calling people out. We're looking at a candidate who was criticised for years for not expressing herself more fully, for not emotionally connecting with people, for apparently being too controlled and calculated. Cold is the word that's often used. And when she has expressed herself, people are outraged. Like I said at the start, Hillary Clinton isn't authentic until she is, and then no one can handle it. We judge in others that which we judge in ourselves. If people can't handle Hillary Clinton speaking up and showing her anger and disappointment, I wonder what that says about them. I wonder about the women who think she should just look forward and try to put everything behind her. I wonder if these are women who didn't speak up, who didn't express their anger after they were treated unfairly, women who felt like they just had to stay quiet or that there would be big consequences. And so when they see Hillary Clinton openly showing her anger and calling people out, it reminds them of the times they wanted to do this, but didn't or couldn't. It reminds them of the times they've had a male colleague take credit for their work or ideas and they couldn't speak up because then they'd not get invited back and would possibly never advance in their careers. Hillary speaking up may remind them of the times they couldn't express their anger at their husbands for some sort of disrespectful behaviour, because expressing anger would have dire consequences, or that speaking up would essentially mean having to walk away, and there wasn't the financial and emotional support for that to be an option. It reminds them of the time when a woman they know did speak up and expressed her anger and was shunned by others, and so they also shunned that woman in order to stay safe and to not face the same fate. And I don't say these things to accuse or to judge, but mostly to understand. And neither are these excuses for the reaction that Hillary Clinton is getting either. For every woman like myself who feels empowered by Hillary's rage, maybe there are others for whom it simply highlights how helpless they feel. I am of the class of woman who's educated and well-placed in society and who can on some level speak out and who has the means to do so. Otherwise, you wouldn't be hearing me now. What if that simply isn't the case, that there are no means to speak out, or you aren't the type of woman who has some level of clout, you don't have the social standing or the financial backing or the education to be able to survive a few people being pissed at you for your opinion or expression? What then? Maybe watching women who can and who do express their anger while you can't own yours is just too much to bear. And again, I don't say that as a judgment or as an excuse, but just as a way to understand. And what about men? We talk a lot about masculine and feminine energies on this podcast. Being assertive, seeking justice, holding others to account, these are classic masculine traits and are generally really positive masculine traits too. What does it say if a man can't tolerate such positive traits in a woman? When Hillary calls people out, how does it feel if you're the sort of man who knows that he could have and maybe even should have called someone else out on some occasion, but simply didn't? What about if you feel that society doesn't allow you to be able to call someone out? Claire mentioned the underlying problems of inequality and how that relates to how Hillary did or did not manage to relate to people. On this point about inequality, I wonder if watching a woman calling other people out so openly is actually painful to watch if you're a man without the social position or the clout to be able to take a stand and to show your anger, for that could cost you your job or your standing and your subsequent livelihood, something so closely tied into notions of masculinity in the first place. In a society where the American dream is increasingly more and more out of reach, perhaps calling people out has too big of a cost. Seeing someone, and a woman no less, and a person who is relatively privileged, who does calling people out, maybe that's just too much of a reminder that you simply can't risk calling someone out yourself. Again, these aren't judgments or excuses, but questions in an aim to more fully understand. And what about if you're in Hillary Clinton's party yourself, and yet can't bear to hear her calling people out? I wonder if that speaks to some level of guilt, that maybe you should have done more. Or perhaps there's some level of shame, that you didn't see it coming, and that perhaps Hillary is right about the things and the people that she has accused, that she's right that they cost her the election, and that yet that in itself is a reminder of all that the party did wrong, and that in itself is simply too painful to look at. Maybe it's easier to try to avoid it and to think of the future and to look ahead rather than to look back at some collective mistakes. Or maybe it's about the fact that you can do everything right and there will still be forces out of your control and there could still be people who can swoop in and sabotage all of your best efforts. Maybe it's just too painful to look at that, to something that is basically an existential pain, and that it's easier to ask for silence rather than a reminder. We judge in others that which we judge in ourselves. And the irony is that if we stop to look past the other, maybe we'll see the similar predicament that everyone is in. We'll see the ways in which a lot of people are not allowed to fully express themselves, be it due to social conditioning or inequality or a mix of complicated factors. Maybe by acknowledging how restricted a lot of us are, we won't any longer be threatened by a woman who is simply being her whole self. We'll no longer be threatened by a woman being truly authentic, something that's been asked of her for so long, and yet can't be handled when finally delivered. You heard from Hadley Freeman, Peter, Jonathan Freeman, Russ Finkelstein, and Claire Foran on this episode of The Gender Knot, where we looked at Hillary Clinton's supposed blame game and asked, can a woman politician call people out, or is that a privilege reserved for men? This episode was presented by me, I'm Naz, and it was co-produced by Katie Vogue, who you also heard from earlier too. Next week, we're going to look at some transgender terminology. Turns out I made some mistakes in a recent episode and some listeners got in touch with me. They're going to walk me through some stuff that I got wrong and how to get it right next time. We've got some cool stuff coming up in the next few weeks, lots of episodes about men actually. We're going to be exploring why a lot of men find it hard to talk to each other about their deepest thoughts and feelings. And we'll also look at masculinity and capitalism. And we're also going to have a guest that I'm especially excited about, but won't yet reveal because I don't want to jinx it and have him suddenly bail. Until next week and beyond, you can find out more on our website, thegendernot.com. That's not with a K. And if you've any thoughts or suggestions, email us on thegendernot@gmail.com or message us through our Facebook page. As always, please take a moment to leave a review on iTunes. Okay, we'll speak to you next week. Bye for now.